Expo Bomb, and we're here to make you think about death and get sad and stuff.
Voices, animal voices, the tremor of cold, the feminine adversary, reaching my threshold, staring at the truth till I'm blind. Black Sun Friday, dropping a mix, dropping the thicks, getting into the mix of all the other kooky tricks. I don't know what I've been told, but I think wood grows on trees. No money comes off that tree. No money comes off that tree. Just the occasional apple makes me happy. And no blueberry jam, because I don't like blueberry jam. But some people I do believe understand that they do enjoy the blueberry jam. And there is a lot of snow dropped in a couple of places around in the country, a couple of other countries, but not here, and not as much as they thought they were. Holy crap, were they ever scared of all that snow coming down? But it didn't. Some of it did, but not. I don't know. Some of it was really kooky. And then there's people, and then they closed the subway, and things like that. And where's the monkey? Hi, EW.
What do you mean there's no money doesn't come off trees? How do you think you get all the branches in the bank?
You don't.
They got branches in the bank.
Yes, they do. We make those. We make them out of pure, 100% unfiltered zombie stink.
Speaking of zombie stink, I just got a nasty headline.
I just took my shoes off for a second, and I got a whiff of them.
That's what it was. Yeah, your zombies are too slow.
No, they're not.
I did see... I don't know.
Zombies are smart. They know where to stay in the shadows and where to come out into the sunlight.
Did you see the headline about the guy who hit the cat and buried it and
yep.
It came up out of the ground for
I know, but we're not talking about that right now either.
Come on.
No. That is a very sad thing that somebody did to that cat.
I know, but still, the cat came back. It was like Pet Cemetery all over again. No?
Nope.
I'm trying.
I know.
I'm trying.
But we're going to talk about movies.
Movies.
Okay. I watched a really bad movie. Scorpion King 4, for anybody who is keeping track. I don't know if anybody's ever seen any of the other ones before that. Scorpion King 1, that was actually kind of fun. Had The Rock. Scorpion right. King 2, that was okay. You know, it was okay. Scorpion King 3, I never bothered to even watch it because it was stupid.
I didn't even know they had a 3.
They did. I never saw it. Scorpion King 4. Wow. I should have stayed with my idea for number 3. Dudeface, who's the main guy, Victor Webster, playing basically the same character, the Scorpion King. Same name, Mateus. What the hell? There's no connection with him in the other movies. He's not no superhero guy. He's not got no special Scorpion King powers or nothing. He's just a guy who's a warrior. And it's lame. But you know what really killed me is that Rutger Hauer's in it.
Okay.
Esme Blanco? Bianco.
Mm-hmm.
She's hot. She's sure. In it. Eve Torres from WWE.
Oh, okay. I knew that name sounded familiar.
Lou Ferrigno.
No way.
Don the Dragon Wilson.
Okay.
Okay. These are all people's like, were you hard up for work or whatever this week? Mm-hmm. M. Emmett Walsh, who's been in crap tons of stuff. Mostly as character actor, but he's still been there. These other guys, I know they've been in a bunch of other stuff, but it looks like they're all done made for TV movies and stuff, mm-hmm. And TV shows and whatever. It's like, why? The show was like 80s style sword and sorcery kind of Hercules kind of thingy that didn't quite make it, and then they threw that. What's this about a button in the Lumberjacks?
I'm not sure.
And why is Keenan saying you had strike 3?
I'm sitting over on left field trying to figure this out.
Yeah, okay. But, so, the whole focus on today's show is going to be a couple of things. One, what I call bleakles.
Wait, what?
Bleakles.
Why that?
Blah. Bleakles.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that.
So, we're going to talk about a couple of things here. But before we get deep into that, I wanted to talk about two TV shows. Well, I can I saw one episode of Constantine and one episode of Gotham as well. I really like what Gotham's doing. I'm not so sure where they're going to go with Dude Face in the Arkham Asylum, but they really got to move that into a slightly different or stranger type of thingy. But that looks cool. Constantine, finally saw the first episode of the new half of the season. Loved it. But I don't know if you recognize it or not, but they keep referring to Pazuzu as the demon that he invited into him.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That is also the name of the demon that was in The Exorcist.
I thought it sounded familiar.
Yep. Pazuzu is the, what the hell was it? God of Flies and Shadows or something like that. Sorry, the Demon of Flies and Shadows. And that's exactly the same demon that possesses Linda Blair in The Exorcist.
Now, let me ask you, now that you watched that episode, does it look like this nun is here to stay?
No, the nun is not here to stay.
Okay. That's why I kind of was hoping not. I was like, really, you don't need any more people in the party.
No, she's basically, she's going to be in Mexico City, and she'll probably stay there as a nun, but she'll probably pop in every once in a while, would my guess. Because, hey, every once in a while, you got to have a nun who can project herself naked across the floor. I got a kick out of that shot. yeah, Jack, I'm not going to go there. So yes, Constantine is fun. I really enjoy it. I hope to hell they don't kill it. But there has been a lot of the backwater chalk, tick, tack, talk from people saying, yeah, they're going to kill it. It's like, that would be stupid. It's a very profitable enterprise for them. It's a good show. Smart. It's got some stuff on it. But Z, you know the cute chick? His sidekick?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Totally, I think, going to be Zatanna.
You think so?
Pretty certain of it, because they keep calling her Z. She keeps calling her Z. She says she took lessons or learned some stuff with a magician. Her father is supposed to be a magician. Zatara.
Ah.
So I'm looking forward to this. It's going to be good. So the two other episodes of the shows that I want to talk about tonight, Agent Peggy Carter.
I did not see the newest episode. If you're going to tell me about last night's episode, I don't want to hear it.
Not last night's episode. I've only seen up to episode 3.
I think that's where they... Oh, how many are they? Are they up to 3 already? I know they're past 3. But okay, go ahead.
Yeah. So one of the overriding show priorities appears to be, and this is pissing me off because it's coming across like a lead weight hitting the side against the head.
Mm-hmm.
Sexism.
Okay, I was afraid you were going to say that, but that would have to be there. I know this sounds bad,
nope.
But it would have to be there because in that time, the time era that they're at, that is technically how bad it was.
Exactly. I get that. But...
Yes, 3 episodes. Last night was a 4th.
Yeah. Here's the thing, though, that's really killing me. They all know she served with Captain America. There'd be more slack given to somebody who has actually worked with.
Well...
Okay? And I do get that the sexism thing would be a very strong part and component of the series. And I'm cool with that, because that is, realistically speaking, a very strong part of accuracy in the show and everything.
Right.
But
no, I agree with you. They do need a respect. You know, she should have some kind of respect because she did work with Captain America. But it seems like they resent her for that. That's what I'm getting out of that.
I don't know about the resentment. I think mostly it's coming across to me as being an attempt to, as a show, trying to impose that, hey, look, those morals were bad then, but still some people won through the day.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and this is also, by the way, kind of a segment that's going to filter off to some other things in the bleakwells later on in the discussion as well.
Oh.
Because I am personally a big fan of equal rights for everyone, treat everybody the same. Nobody is better than anybody else based on what they are. They're better than people based on who they are, at what they do. It's not based on what you are. So just because a guy is a guy and a girl is a girl, that doesn't mean that either one of those is better than anybody else at anything other than what they actually achieve and accomplish and proceed to do well at. So, like, The Peggy Carter thing is like somebody's hitting me with the back of a stick every single time. It's like, yes, sexism. Yes, sexism. Yes, sexism. Well, it's really pissing me off.
Overkill. Huh? I mean, I agree. There is a such thing as overkill, and I totally agree with you that everyone is equal, no matter what their race, sex, age, all that stuff. You know, there is, you know, I think at a certain point when you're doing a show like this, you need to show that technically is there, but not beat it like a dead horse.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Because what it sounds like to me, what it feels like it's coming across to me is that they're going to have a pivot point that's going to say, oh, well, look, she can be accepted as one of the boys as well. It's like, what? That didn't really need to be done like that. Because it's just kind of weirding me out that the way that the show is kind of trying to do this subversive thing, and I'm not really digging it too much.
See, I'm shocked that you think it's going that direction. I think what they're doing is, in a sense, driving her out, and she's going to go on her own.
But she can't. She forms S.H.I.E.L.D. She forms S.H.I.E.L.D. from those guys.
That's
how S.H.I.E.L.D. develops.
You say from those guys, but my viewpoint is not from that office. I mean, it's not unlike Marvel to change up everything from the comic book in the first place. We know that already. But
not to change it up in some degrees, but some core tenets always remain the same.
Well, and see, this is where I think they might take that direction, is that, you know, okay, Stark's out of the picture. Maybe Stark's home begins, or his little secret layers or whatever, begins their offices, and then they create their own offices. But, you know, like right now, only one guy looks favorable from where she's at now that she might take on the team.
Got to correct you on one thing.
What's that?
Stark didn't form S.H.I.E.L.D.
No, he didn't.
And
but
his resources didn't form S.H.I.E.L.D. either.
But he did, in that episode, end up letting her stay in one of his homes.
Correct. But she said she didn't want to.
Right. And so what I'm saying is, you know, we know he has unlimited resources, and I think that his resources is what she's going to utilize along with Jarvis to build off of. And I mean, that's what it's... To me, that's what the direction it's looking like. But I do get the you're beating a dead horse with this portion.
Yep.
Over and over.
Yep. And that's pissing me off.
Yeah.
More than anything else, as far as that show is concerned, it's kind of the thing that's driving me to not actually enjoy it, because now I keep looking for the angle. What's this angle? What's that angle? What's going on with that? Like, okay, this is just not really working for me there. I'm still willing to give them an opportunity to continue proceeding along that path. We will have to wait and see, as Jack mentioned at one point here, the good one.
Yeah. Well, I did not see last night, so I can't tell you if it was a good one. But I could only assume, since it's only the fourth episode, they're probably going to stay on that same beating that particular topic.
Probably. The bigger issues I have with is, like, how can you have super science fiction-y, heavy-duty sci-fi tech in a world that hasn't actually quite gotten to that point yet? So we're talking 1950s America. You don't have explosives that can cause implosions.
Oh, that's true.
Like, that kind of technology is way behind, way ahead of what Stark would be able to accomplish at that time. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that would be, as far as comic books are concerned, oh, I don't know, 2010, 2015 kind of tech, not 1950s tech. Now, mind you, that all being said, yes, it's a fantasy, yes, it's superheroes, yes, they did have a robot Toro as the Human Torch in The Invaders during World War II, as far as that's concerned, but there's such a lack of all of that universe stuff. How can you then have all of this other stuff suddenly show up?
Well, I can see the...
And the typewriter thing. That one was killing me, too.
Oh, that one got me. It's like, wait a second, you're telling me Wi-Fi existed?
Not Wi-Fi. Teletype.
Still.
It's the... wiggity-whack. But...
See, I can see the implosion thing as a possibility because, you know...
Are you kidding?
No, well, here's why. and I could be wrong, and you can correct me on this, but this is where I think that that could be a possibility, because at this time, we know that the number one thing they were working on was explosion, especially through nuclear war, because nuclear war had already been being looked at that particular time. But since they went the scientific side, or, you know, the fictional side of saying, hey, we can pump up this scrawny little guy into this big muscular heels, all that stuff type thing, then, okay, they can say, well, we've dabbled in science and decided how to make an explosion go backwards. You know what I mean?
No.
No?
Science is all wrong for it in that show.
The science was wrong for Captain America, too, but I wasn't going there.
the science is not as wrong in Captain America.
So okay? you're saying that we can take a scrawny little kid like that and turn him into Captain America?
Sure.
I would love to do that.
Through a very involved, long process, yes, that is something that can be done. What can't be done is you can't generate from a small bioelectric liquid mass, create enough force to create an explosion that is capable of imploding in that way. They had one of those balls that created enough force to explode out and then to implode in, to completely vaporize a lake. Guess what? That's mass and energy. Where did it go?
What, doesn't a nuclear explosion do something similar as
nope.
well?
A nuclear explosion is all outward force.
I thought there was a... I'll have to ask. I'll get confirmation on this for you next week. I will ask some experts that I do know. But if I recall right, there was a particular moment of a nuclear bomb that it does have an implosion
nope.
moment.
What it has is it has atoms smashing against other atoms. They don't implode. They explode.
Oh, okay.
The complete process for a nuclear explosion is completely explosive. It is all outward mass. It's the energy that's being expelled outward. An implosion implies a translation of mass into pure energy that's going somewhere else. And then the way they have shown an implosion on there is that all of the energy is exploded, and then all of the mass is reduced into a small little ball. And I'm sorry, but that won't work that way. If you have the entire rocks... By the way, one thing I do like that they've got going through the whole show is Roxxon. Roxxon is the evil villain of Marvel Universe, and it's just funny as hell to see it like this way. But when the plant explodes and then implodes, ooh, look, they have a ball they put on the back of a pickup truck.
Yeah, okay, now see, that was one of my things. So we're going to put it on a milk truck. Well, wait a second, doesn't that sucker shake around?
Yeah, not only that, if you were to implode an entire plant like that, the weight, the mass, would be massive. Well, it's not fitting on a back of a flatbed.
Not only that, but okay, let's just use the damage that it did for that particular plant. And when they destroyed the milk truck full of those puppies, where was the damage?
After that, they showed you the lake. The lake was empty.
Yeah, but it would have been a heck of a lot more than just that.
Right. That's kind of what I'm saying. The thing is, where would all of that mass have gone to? Mm-hmm. If you have an implosion implies that its dense matter is being created and pushed into a smaller form. That creates mass. Mass is not destroyed. It is merely converted. Energy is not destroyed. It is merely converted. Mass is not destroyed. It is merely converted. These are the parts of the laws of physics. As we understand them now, maybe 40 years from now those laws will change. Whatever. Today, they're essentially pretty straightforward.
The plant was a big ball of mangled metal. That I do remember. But the lake, if that imploded, wouldn't that have been...
ball of mangled water.
Yeah, which eventually would have just gone back to a lake.
Not necessarily.
Where would the water go? Because it's not...
That's kind of what I'm saying.
There's no evaporation, there's no... I mean...
Sure, if we're going to, as Jack just mentioned, wormhole. Sure, but that translated to somewhere else. Wormhole would be the only theoretical possibility, but the device that he created is not a wormhole, it's an explosive.
Right, because if it was a wormhole, then they wouldn't have had the mangled mess of metal.
Correct. But, needless to say, I'm not digging the science. It's really putting me out of it. I would like to see a little bit more slight differences. I mean, it becomes way too predictable to me in this show right now, and it's really driving me up the wall. There's like no surprises. There's like no, hey, look, okay, it's going to be, what? No, it was really just that guy. Okay. Kind of thing, and not really digging it. The key dropped from the guy on the top of the truck. Yeah, hey, look, somebody's going to find that. They're going to find out Stark was involved. The whole railroading of Stark to implicate in all of the problems. Wow, what a surprise. Oh, by the way, I did like the guy who was the leader of Roxxon. What's his face? Ah, what the hell was his name?
I know which guy you're talking about.
He was in Big Ass Spiders as well, by the way.
I did not see that.
I know that you haven't seen that. I'm just saying, he was in that movie as well. But moving on to the other TV show I wanted to talk about today. This show is not actually on TV. This is a web series.
Oh?
I don't normally watch any web series. But this one caught me because of this one video clip that I posted on my Facebook page there. Friday, Saturday, something like that. I don't remember when. So now I've seen the entire two seasons of it. Like, I binge-watched the whole damn thing. The show is called Ruby. And Ruby is spelled R-W-B-Y. It's an anime series, which right off the bat should tell everybody's like, what? Okay. I don't normally watch anime series. Unless they're extremely deep, in-depth, long, involved series like Ghost in the Shell and Akira were. Because those are really... They've got a whole lot of philosophy and metaphysics and all sorts of stuff that's like, wow, that's just strange shit. And I like that stuff. Mm-hmm. Ruby is very fun. It's very youngish. I can't help but have been hooked on it. I don't know why. It's not my typical cup of tea. But this one clip is part of four trailers. The RWBY in the name of Ruby stands for Red, White, Blue, Yellow. Sorry, black, yellow. And what the show originally started as four trailers, one for the girl who represents Ruby, one for the girl who represents white, one for represents the girl black, and one who represents the girl yellow. They is their colors of what they represent. And basically speaking, red, Ruby, is Little Red Riding Hood fighting thousands of werewolves.
Oh, wow.
With a... weapon that converts from a shotgun to a sniper rifle to a huge ass scythe. It's freaking cool to just watch. It's just like one of these things. La di da di da. Wow, look at that werewolf. Wow, look at that werewolf. Wow, look at that. The fight sequences are freaking awesome in this show. I'm not really all that. The first season of the series is kind of funny because they have all these little black outlines of people walking by. These are the non-player characters in the show. It's like, wait a second, that's a black silhouette walking by. Wait, there's a whole freaking bunch of black silhouettes walking by. What the hell? It's like a market scene. And then you have your main character, Ruby, showing up in her...
red outfit?
Yeah, and her sister, Yang, showing up in her yellow outfit. And it's just... it's one of these quirky little fun shows, and it's, sadly enough to say for me, it's also predictable as to what they were doing, but what makes it really cool is the animation and the fight sequences. The fight sequences are freaking awesome. It's all that over-the-top Japanese anime stuff, and how that all goes, and it's really cool.
I'll take your word for it, because I'm not 100% sure how I view some of these... Japanimation programs.
A lot of them really cater to young girls. And it sounds very sexist to say that, but it does. More and more people are breaking the molds as far as gender identification and stuff. So it's like, okay, now you've got young boys watching the shows too and connecting with it too. And back and forth. Whatever. But I've always found that for the same reason why I've never been a really big fan of Harry Potter is that the stories and the dialogue and a lot of the context that's being used throughout the entire story is very... what's the word I want to use? What's the word I want to use? Jack, what's the word I want to use? I don't want to use dumbed down because that's not the right word.
No.
It's kept at a lower level of intellectual capacity.
Simplified?
It's oversimplified.
Oversimplified.
And it's way too much focus on teen drama, teen angst, and stuff like that. So it's always it's always feeding into that cycle of endless, hey, look, I'm the top of the world. No, I suck. Oh, hey, I'm emo. Hey, it's like, and a lot of that crap just bores the crap out of me.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And the one thing I liked about this show, Ruby, is that a lot of the dialogue is very snappy for anime.
Right.
And I kind of found it really odd that it was, okay, so you've got all these different people and the different characters. It's not Japanese anime. This is actually North American anime. This is done by the same people who do Red vs. Blue.
Mm-hmm.
So they kind of fixate on a way that actually, for me, brought some really good response in the dialogue, because the whole show is about the dialogue.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, I just saw that too. So, that's my TV show roundup that I wanted to yap about right now.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's time for an intermezzo thing.
We can do that.
Groovy.
A
that was the end of the song. So I think I'll continue to talk and just go along. The words have no meaning because there's no screaming. And God darnish, I think they were all wrong. And if anybody's interested, that was Daft Punk as remixed by the Crystal Method from the good old movie Tron. Because it was fun.
I thought it sounded familiar.
Yeah, this that was what's his face? Bridges. Jeff. Mm-hmm. Jeff Bridges. In the background, the voice of the guy playing the Tron stuff.
Yes.
So, the reason why I started out the show was Bleakwells. Because, oh my gosh, the stuff that they've announced over the last couple of days. Indiana Jones remake. Good God, why? That's the one thing I had to say.
I had to mute the mic for a moment. I was cracking up laughing. Yes, I saw who. That they're talking about two different people for it.
At least Chris Pratt, I think, could pull it off if he's got the right direction being given to him. Because he's a good actor. I'm sure he could pull off that. Hey, man, let's just do stuff and get it done. Because I like him as an actor. I've only seen him in Guardians of the Galaxy. So I'm pretty sure he's going to be good because I like that one. Mm-hmm. But I don't really see a need to remake Indiana Jones. It was a perfectly darn good movie all on its own as it was.
Now, I would be impressed if it's not going to be a remake, but more of, hey, we're continuing from here.
And again, Bleakwells goes into the same thing. Prequels, sequels, reboots, remakes, redos, reinterprets, regurgitate the crap out of the crap out of the whatever.
Well, not necessarily. See, they introduced, and I'm glad they're choosing somebody else, but they introduced LaBeouf in the last one as his son. So technically, what they could do is some time has passed, Harrison Ford could still come in and kind of do like the Lost Crusade or whatever episode where they had Sean Connery. So now we've got the father who's wonderfully criticizing, you know, still have Harrison Ford in there, but the son's taking over.
Yeah, but I don't think that's what they're going to do.
I was hoping that's the direction they'd go. They go for a total reboot. I'm just done with them.
But you see, this is the problem I have with Hollywood. And it's a big problem in my book because it's not Hollywood that's creating the problem. It's the consuming public that continues buying into it. Mm-hmm. Is that the reason that Hollywood keeps doing it is because people keep buying it up. All right? Hollywood only follows where the money is. And the money is, okay, it did well, great the first time. Let's do it a second time and a third time and a fourth time. And sure, you're going to get that percentage of people going through it. But the problem we need to do and focus on as the consuming public is to start saying, yeah, no, that was crap. We're not buying that. We're not watching it. We're not going to support it any way, shape, or form. How about you try doing one of these other stories? New? Dude, let's look at this. The number of books released every, and I say this all the time, there's over 10,000 new books released every year. 10,000.
Yep.
Of that 10,000 books, maybe 200 of them will be turned into movies. Now, mind you, of that 10,000 books, how many of them were good?
Now, probably not. So 200 of those turn into scripts.
Right, but not all those scripts become movies.
Yeah, of the 200 scripts, I think the last statistic I was given was 5 turn into a movie.
But there's about 130 movies released every year.
Go figure. And only 5 are based on a book.
I'm going to say that that's probably not correct when you look at the movies that have come out over the last 5 years.
Yeah.
Most of them appear to have been based on somebody's book.
But then again, technically, any Marvel movie could be stated based on a book.
Correct. And then we have like the 50 Shades of Grey coming out based on a book.
No, don't start it on that.
What the hell did I just say the guy's name? The Harry Potter movies, based on books. There's a whole bunch of them. Most of the movies that I've seen, that I keep seeing bits and pieces of, are based on either short stories or based on books or based on adaptations of something. And they all exist in printed material. But the thing that's killing me is all these sequels, all these prequels, all these reboots. E.T.'s coming out as a reboot later this year. That's crapular.
I did not hear about that.
Yes, you did. I mentioned it last 2 weeks ago.
No, I was doing what I was doing now. I did not hear that.
Oh, denial and refusing to hear the truth are not going to get you any farther away from the truth. It is already slated to come out in September, I think, of this year.
You know, the only reason people really enjoy watching E.T. now is because they look and say, oh my God, that was Drew Barrymore.
Well, I'm sure that's one of the reasons. I'm sure there are other reasons, like it was a good movie. One of those tear jerkers is like, oh my God, E.T. phone home. I've never been a big fan of E.T. Oh my God, I'm going to say that. It wasn't my kind of movie, but it's a classic that stands the test of time. It's a quaint movie that has all that tearjerk crap built into it that does well as it stands.
See, and they could totally still rewrite the movie as the next movie. You know, hey, here's the little girl. I forget the girl's name, but here's a little girl all grown up. And hey, guess what? They bring Drew Barrymore back. It probably bring more money than remaking the whole damn thing.
But it would cost them more money.
They would recoup it. I mean, seriously.
That's not how Hollywood thinks. See, here's a cool analogy. Guillermo del Toro, who, by the way, is in Toronto right now filming Pacific Rim 2. He starts out his movie-making process by saying, I have a budget.
Yes.
Here's my budget. $1 million. That's my budget for this movie. Then he proceeds to lay out where that budget's going to be. Oh, okay, no, I can't do this because I don't have enough budget. Oh, I can do this. Great, I have enough budget. That's it. He never, well, I think he almost never, goes over budget. Once he's established his budget, that's it. Everything gets done within the budget that he's set. Maybe he has a couple of dollars extra. Maybe he goes a couple of dollars over. But it's never anything like he went $500,000 over budget. At most, he goes like $2,000 over budget. And it's like, really? That's chump change for him.
I don't even understand how these idiots who do go over budget can do that. Because
major Hollywood productions all go over budget. All of them.
My film, the high end of my film, is $1 million. And that's because they assume that these particular stunts would cost that much money. Well, my stunt guy, who's been in the industry for over 30 years, says, no, your stunts are very simple and basic. The most elaborate of the stunts can be done really easy and cheap.
Yes. But Hollywood works like construction works. Okay, it works the same way. It's too much everybody getting their hands in the pie, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so when you have a construction site going up, they give it a budget, $1 million budget. Oh, geez, we got to redo all of this stuff. Wait a sec, what do you mean redo all this stuff? Yeah, it's all done wrong. Why was it all done wrong? I thought you pay these guys several $100,000 to do all of this. Yeah, but they did it all wrong, so now what's that mean? Well, it means you got to pay more to get the rest of stuff fixed. What?
Yeah, no.
Okay, and that's exactly the same way Hollywood works. They go and say, yeah, we're going to do this. No, no, we got to change all of it and redo it all over. What? How do you not know how this whole process works? They know. It's like a science for these guys. They have this shit down, but yet they continue to go over the budget.
Well, you know, the part on the budgets that really cracks me up, and now this is coming from somebody who's firsthand hired actors and actresses for films. When they start it, the first thing you ever get asked by an actor or even a director, because David Armstrong is one of people.
Where's my trailer?
No. What's your budget? That is their question.
The actors ask what is their budget?
They ask what the film's budget is. So they know, they almost already know right away what they could request as far as a pay.
Okay.
I got the same. Okay, David Armstrong, he's the one that did all the Saw movies. That was his very first question. What's your budget?
As a director or as an actor?
As a director.
Well, okay, I would expect a director would ask that question.
But these guys want to know. I mean,
well, yeah, it's important. I mean, as a director, you need to know where, how much are you going to be in a big budget movie? You're going to be in a middle budget movie or a small budget movie? I would expect a director to ask that question.
If you're an actor and you walk into a film project and they're like, okay, this is for Marvel, do you think you're not going to get paid?
True. This is where I'm saying. It's like for an actor to ask that question, it's kind of odd in my book. But I guess if the mentality mindset is down there where it's like, hey, that means I can do whatever. Okay, I get it. But as a director, I would expect them to know what the budget is. Like that would be a primary thing.
Actors can get money for the filming, but if they do and if they negotiate their contract right, they can get money off the back end of the films as well.
That's called merchandising and all sorts of other stuff, peripherals, residuals, all that other crap.
Exactly. So they might say, okay, I'm going to come into this film. Hey, this is a low budget Marvel film. I'm just going to use it as that. Okay. So people think, well, some of you might not know it. Okay, this is. I'm just going to name a name. I know it's popular, but still, Howard the Duck. Everybody thinks, oh my god, that flopped the first time around. Okay,
it did flop.
Yeah. So
it flopped in the theater.
Right. So everybody thinks, well, we're not going to get paid good on this. But if an intelligent actor comes along and says, okay, what do you want to pay me as an actor for this? Okay, can I get 5% off the back end as well? And that film turns around and makes $350 million on opening night. You know, that actor just got one heck of a paycheck on the back end.
Sure. But any smart director or any smart movie producer is going to say, nope.
Well, actually, no. Some of them, like the major stars, do get stuff like that.
Major stars, sure.
Yeah.
I mean, but they're not actually – well, and I don't know because I don't deal with a lot of the people, but I would imagine that most people in the major star category are not doing all of the negotiation for themselves. They have agents for that purpose, and that's their job. They understand where the margins are, where the tricks are, where the ticks are, where everything, all that little bit and bit and bit and bit is.
Yeah.
So that's funny. Now, the funny thing about Howard the Duck, because you brought that up, who told me this? It was somebody who was actually in... can't remember what it was. But after Guardians of the Galaxy, and this is one of the things that happened with Guardians of the Galaxy, nobody was... Well, okay. I can't really say nobody because I haven't been privy to all the discussions. But there's a large portion that weren't sure it was going to do well. And that's understandable. I didn't think it was going to do well at first either because it was such a unusual property for them to have picked. So there's not a lot of merchandise that was put out for the movie in the beginning. There's not a lot of play put out in the beginning of the movie. It's like it's kind of one of those things that just sort of snuck up and then bam, look at that. Blockbuster! But speaking of Howard the Duck, in connection with that, that one little cheesy little bit at the end of the movie...
Mm-hmm.
They suddenly released 200,000 new units of the DVD, and they sold like freaking hotcakes.
Yep.
That's from a movie that's 25 years old.
And this is getting everybody stoked up for what might be announced at the end of this year.
Don't think they're going to announce a Howard the Duck movie, but they did announce a Howard the Duck comic book series.
Which I think it's going to bring either a movie or a TV series.
I think it's more likely going to bring a TV series than it is a movie. The Howard the Duck character is much better suited to have some kind of quirky half-hour, one-hour-long sitcom thing going on. Dude, he's a giant duck.
Yes. Right there alone.
Because the sight gags on that alone, like week after week, would be, dude, did you see what the giant duck just did? No, what did he do? He totally quacked on that guy. Wow, man, that's just cool. I could totally see that crap going through.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way.
Backs me up.
Yes. Howard the Duck was Lucas's big flop that he was always embarrassed about.
I really never knew that was a Lucas film.
Yep. That was one of his properties early on that he was really, really enthused about. And then it just really bombed at the theaters. Like, it was horribly bombed at the theaters. It was, like, released at 1,100 theaters, North America wide or whatever, and did, like, maybe one-fifth of what they expected it would do sort of thing.
Yeah, but how did it do on the back end is one of the good questions. And not count. I mean, this would be before Guardians that I would ask that on, because I recall it hitting, you know, like, HBO and Showtime and, you know, literally staying there for months because of the demand.
Hard to say. Because, you know, with Hollywood math, no movie ever makes any money.
Well, this is true. This is true.
And I'm just doing some...
Because they make more money on claiming a loss than they do on... Well, correct. Depending on how successful the film is, they do make more money on the loss.
Correct. And that's kind of the thing that is like, really? How is it that Lord of the Rings didn't make any money?
That one I really want to know, especially since they released how many different copies or versions of the DVD?
Precisely. And not only that, it's like, no, I'm pretty sure it made some money because...
They went and did The Hobbit. Jesus.
Well, no, not only that, because, oh, I don't know, it broke box office records.
Yeah, that too. It did, yes.
It's like, it was one of those most highly anticipated movies of all time sort of thing.
Which Spider-Man broke records? Was it the first one with what's-his-name or the second one?
I think the first one. I'm not sure. I didn't really pay much attention to that one because Spider-Man is not my thing.
Well, I know, and that was my thing, was that he's not that well, I mean, he's a popular character in the comics because he still happens in newspapers and everything, but I just didn't expect the film to take it the way it did. And when they said it broke box office records, I was like, oh, wow. But I think that was the same year there was like five films that did that.
Probably.
One of them was Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's the same time. Well, Spider-Man is also part of the track for Marvel's new announced thing last week, the week before, about how they're converging their Ultimate Universe and their Marvel Universe to create a single universe. Spider-Man will be the focal point to which that transition goes. So with just so you know...
Negotiations with Sony might be finally ending.
No, there's nothing firmed up on the Sony portion of that.
I don't think they're going to make that as public until it's official. And the only reason I say that is because we never thought Paramount was going to give up the Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah, whatever.
I mean, Raiders got a very good income, even in DVD sales, which is really where they make a lot of their money as well. But, I mean, it still made some darn good money, even when they brought Harrison Ford back after so many years and said, let's do it again.
Got some numbers on Howard the Duck.
All right.
So, production budget, $37 million.
I can see that.
Worldwide gross, $37.96.
So, they didn't even break even.
No, they just broke even, as it were, probably this year.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
They just made their triple as of this year?
Yep.
Wow.
So it's like, okay, well, that's kind of sad. Well, but, you know, whatever.
That kind of reflects your theory about Hollywood claiming the losses so much. Because I cannot see that you're saying that just this year they broke triple that.
Well, I don't know. I mean, the information I'm looking at doesn't necessarily say whether or not this is a in a certain time period or that it was based on whatever. But it's kind of hard. I've never really read this site before. So,
well, let's take it. Okay, so, and I can say I know this because budgeting my film and so forth. What's this stupid film called? Paranormal Activity.
Yeah, no, I don't want to talk about that one.
What was their budget? Do you remember? You told me their budget. I was told a different number, and you corrected me.
Oh, their original budget from what I told was like $10,000.
Okay. See, now this is what I heard was they actually did $1 million budget. Either way, let's just go high end. Let's just use high end for a moment, even though they really didn't have anything.
Nope. Production budget, according to Box Office Mojo, is $15,000.
Okay. Now let's say $15,000. Do you know what they ended up doing within their first year?
$195 million worldwide.
And that personally drives me nuts because that's such a horrible film. And then it was afterwards a studio picked it up.
Yes.
And did it increase in looks, making it any better than what it was before?
No. Nope. It's a mediocre average movie, but because it had a kick, it was enough of a kick to make it sell. And that's what happened with... oh, crap. What the hell was the one with the dripping nose girl?
There's a couple of dripping nose... Blair Witch Project,
yes. I'm sorry. I can always remember her as the dripping nose chick. That is all that movie represents to me. But because we only have a little bit more time, I want to talk about two more obliquals.
Yes.
Fantastic Four. Up until today, I was very down on that movie because it was like, crap, they're just going to put some pablum crap and repackage together and call it some kind of stupid jizz. Mm-hmm. Then I saw the trailer today and it's like, well, that looks better than I was expecting. There's not much to the trailer.
Yeah.
Okay, you don't really see anything, which is good because I don't want to see everything in the movie in the trailer. It looks very polished, which is going to be a good thing because it looks really a lot more like the X-Men first class movies, the last two, Days of Future Past and First Class. And those are really polished, good movies. They're quality movies. I like them. Mm-hmm. But much better than X-Men 3. Oh, my God, what a piece of crap.
Well, you saw who the... Who it's done by, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's fine. I mean, I can live with that. It's not the end of the world. But as long as it looks good, and it feels good, and it stays within its own thing, I'm fine with the changes that they've made as far as story and plot lines. Instead of flying into space, they're flying into an alternate dimension. It's like, okay, at least it's still part of the same basic concept. It's just they've changed how it works. The relationship of the characters, okay, completely different, but... if it stays true to itself inside the movie, I'll be fine with it. Leading up to the trailer was more, oh, there's no way they can make this crap work. No way. And now I'm beginning to see, well, maybe there is a way, and maybe they can actually work. So I still will be giving it more of a grain of salt to see what happens to the movie. The one that I'm also equally a little cheesed off about is Ghostbusters.
I have not seen the trailer, but I've seen...
No trailer yet.
Names.
Just the announcement of the names.
Yeah.
And I was reading somebody's post online earlier, actually about 20 minutes before the show started, and I have to agree and echo exactly what they said. It is a... okay, so we have this thing called racism, and then we have this thing called reverse racism. So now we have this thing called sexism, and I'm thinking we have this thing called reverse sexism going on into play. This movie looks like the exact same thing as putting tits on Thor. I'm happy to see a show or a thing about tits on Thor. That doesn't bother me. It's the way they got to it that bothered me. Ghostbusters, all female cast of Ghostbusters. I could buy into that if it wasn't so blatantly appears to be a, oh, let's make them all women, that way we can get women to watch the movie too.
Wait,
I think women would watch a movie that had strong characters that was about a strong story about anything. There's no need to just make them female versions of the Ghostbusters people.
Right. Well, I mean, what? Women didn't watch it because Sigourney Weaver was in it?
Women don't have to see a strong woman character. They'd be happy to see, like anybody would be happy to see a strong character movie with strong people with strong story. Male or female, this obsession that North America, and this is primarily North American obsession, is that women can't be a strong character. What are you talking about? Of course they can. There's strong women throughout all of history. They exist. They're happy. They can be whatever they want to be as well as any man can be too. And this is the kind of thing that bugs me.
They're claiming it's just the base. It's all because of comedy. So they get comedy women in place, which now I don't know the whole list of names. I saw like one or two of the actresses.
I only recognize the one lady.
Yeah, same here. But if they're handpicked by Dan Aykroyd, who knows comedy, that could still turn out to... I'm just saying it could turn out.
I won't knock that possibility, but what I'm saying is it seems to be another component of this whole, let's try and empower women by showing women characters in movies.
Mm-hmm.
How about you just make a movie that has a story that anybody can like? This whole obsession that we have in society nowadays is, it's a man thing, it's a woman thing. It's like, how about just making a person thing.
Yeah.
Okay? Because I don't care if the movie has a bunch of women in it. It's like, fine, they're the story, it works, it's funny, great, I love it. It's a bunch of guys, it's funny, it's quirky, it's happy, I love it. It's people doing stupid shit and it just looks like stupid shit, I'm bored. You know, it's like it's, I go from 0 to 50 in like seconds with stuff like that. It's, there's got to be some elements of interest to it, and I really wanted to see a Ghostbusters sequel. And I know that they've had the whole political thing going back and forth, and who's involved with it, and everything else. And I think that no matter how they run that, it's going to be tempered and tampered and filtered and colored and just spoiled as a result of all that stuff, because it's not going to come through the way that the original Ghostbusters movie came through. The original Ghostbusters movie was four guys, four people that were funny, that enjoyed putting together something.
Well, and only two of the original cast wanted to come back. Well, no, technically three, but one can't now unless he's one of the ghosts.
Yeah.
But, I mean... At this point, I mean, Harold Ramis and Dan Aykroyd wrote the first two. If it's just Dan Aykroyd doing this one, I can see it could still have its potentials, but probably just not hold the same weight as the first one.
And that will be sad.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
And on that merry note...
There's a note?
There's always a note. It's a ding-dong, the witch is dead. Bing-bing-bing-bing-bing-bing-bing-bing. Bing. I just wanted to say, everybody, thanks for coming out to the show, listening to me blather on about, because that's what I kind of do every night on Wednesday nights, 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time on your radio dial of the internet on the TMV Cafe right here in After Rot. Please feel free to come by on our Facebook page anytime you feel like it, because it's like I put stuff there. And then the Twitter, which I should probably Twitter more of, or on my site, zombiezack.com. Go there. Buy my book. Buy many of books. Buy a whole bunch of books. Lots of them. Keep writers writing. Good stuff. None of this crap stuff. You know? Good stuff. EW, I think you have a show coming up after Wist.
I do. We have the Electric Wizard coming up. Spotlighting.
Wizard!
A cornerstone of music. Classic rock himself, Mr. Ozzy Osbourne.
Ozzy rocks. Always rocks. Rocks, rocks, never stops.
Yes, sir.
Thanks for coming on the show again, EW.
Not a problem.
Everybody in the chat room, hi. Everybody listening to the streams, hi. Everybody smoking at 420, you guys keep doing that. It's fine. Thanks a bunch, and have yourself all a rafter-rotten good time.
Of a big surprise. If you go down in the woods today, you'd better go in disguise. For every bear that ever there was will gather there for certain, because today's the day that teddy bears have their picnic.